This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Tanev around the net. Tanev at the line for Bufflin. His shot got blocked. Right down the left side for Riley Smith. Smith lets the shot go. Riley Smith with 6:58 to go blocks the Dustin Bufflin shot. Has some room down the left side and finds the top part of the net. Vegas Golden Knights are back in front.
The Golden Knights would stay in front, taking a commanding 3-1 series lead in this Western Conference final. Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. A special 2-hour Saturday afternoon edition of the show. We hope you've enjoyed TSN Radio's coverage of the semifinals of the World Hockey Championships. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets. News and audio is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good afternoon to Papa Bear Ginsberg, to Dave Minuk on
good
the
afternoon.
Other side. Good afternoon to you gentlemen.
I like this time.
We like the 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Kind of like, wasn't that the old summer? Didn't we switch to, it was the old time, and then we switched to the mornings for summer.
Old time hockey.
Yeah, the shows used to be in the afternoon.
Sometimes the shows were at noon.
Yeah.
But oftentimes...
Never this late. No, there used to be some afternoon shows, for sure.
On occasion, depending on if the Jets had like a 6 o'clock home start on a Saturday, we do the show at noon or something. It bounced back and forth. But of course, this is a little later than normal for us, but that's okay. We're just a little more awake.
Productive. Had a nice little Saturday already.
Yeah, Dave's been very productive. Ezzy, you've been productive?
Very productive. Yeah. I can't remember what it feels like to sleep in on a Saturday.
Well,
we rarely have that opportunity.
Like, you literally have, another week of that,
yeah.
And that's about it?
Yeah.
Then you'll never sleep in again. So enjoy that. So, I'm glad you enjoyed your little schluff this Saturday morning.
I'm just glad to be back. Sean Asor and I weren't able to participate on the Wednesday night show.
Yeah. You feeling better? You're a little under the weather?
Still a little bit under the weather, But you did a great job. I mean, it's
not easy
to do a radio show by yourself. And I listened to most of the show,
And
you did a great job.
Kudos. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Let's talk about last night's Jets Golden Knights game 4 of this Western Conference final, and much like game 3, but even I think a little more pronounced last night, the Winnipeg Jets, I think most observers who watched that game would say they were the better of the two teams. They controlled the majority of the play, they controlled the majority of the flow of the game, but the Vegas Golden Knights, opportunistic as can be, they get that Riley Smith goal very late in the third period. The Winnipeg Jets can't equalize for a third time on the night, and the Golden Knights sweep both games at home. They take that 3-1 series lead. They now have the opportunity to close out this series tomorrow afternoon in a little less than 23 hours from now, when game 5 of the series is back at Bell MTS Place. The Golden Knights have just been opportunistic, and they've been backstopped by absolutely fantastic goaltending from Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, Drew, you mentioned the Riley Smith goal there, and that goal by Smith, guys, was absolutely killer with, just about under 7 minutes to play in the game. And, Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, that line has been fantastic all playoffs. They've been really good in this series against the Jets. And, Marc-Andre Fleury, we knew that he was going to be good heading into the series because he was excellent in the first two series against LA and San Jose. But I mean, you mentioned the third period, Drew, and how well the Jets played. I thought they were great in the first period. And, again, an early goal scored by that Vegas top line. And it was on the power play, and it was a horrible call. I mean, let's be honest. That was a bad call on the Jets.
Tyler Myers agrees with you. He used some profanity.
Was it not a horrible call? I mean,
it looked like that should not
have been called a penalty.
It looked like Carpenter got blown over by a gust of wind.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it was definitely not a penalty, but as Don Cherry spoke about during the first intermission, it's a Myers can't put himself into that position to let the official take the, make the call. Now, should have it been diving? Absolutely. Ryan Carpenter dives on that play. You can easily take both of them, or you can even just take Carpenter if you're really, you know, but most officials in that case. I can understand why the call was made given the actions of the players involved, but it was a bad call, no doubt.
Absolutely. And, you know, what are you going to do if you're the Jets? The penalty was called. Vegas goes to the power play. And, of course, William Karlsson, Wild Bill, he's been so good all playoffs long. He scores. And, you know, Jonathan Marsh is so right now has to be, along with Scheifele, one of the leading Conn Smythe candidates with Marc-Andre Fleury. And, you know, it's an unfortunate turn of events for the Jets early on in the game, and it's unfortunate that a Dustin Byfuglien turnover leads to Riley Smith's goal. You know, the puck is rolling. You know, Riley Smith finds a little bit of space underneath, you know, the crossbar and over the shoulder of Connor Hellebuyck. But, I mean, the Jets were in this game, guys, and, you know, looking at this series at a macro level right now, the Jets are down 3-1, and we know what the statistics are. I mean, you go down 3-1, your chances of winning three games in a row and winning the series, they're not good. The odds are against the Jets right now, but you have to be feeling good, Dave, about the way that you've played in the series, because not only could this series be tied right now, that game yesterday could have easily gone to overtime, Drew. The Jets could be up 3-1 in this series. So I don't think that you're upset with the way that you've played. I think you have to take care of those turnovers. You talked about it. It seems like every time, guys, the Jets turn over the puck right now, it's in the back of the net. And we know that the Golden Knights are so speed. Pardon me, they're so speedy, and we know that the Vegas Golden Knights are a great quick transition team, Dave, right now, but the Jets have played really well. When you look at all of those metrics, those advanced stats, the zone time, the high danger scoring chances, the Jets are doing a good job at creating offense right now. They're just not finishing. And sure, do the Jets need more secondary scoring right now? Sure, they might be relying a little bit too much on those top two lines. I thought the Scheifele line was excellent again last night. I thought Patrick Laine and even Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, coming off of the illness, the malaise, he was good. But right now, I mean, this series could easily be tied. And if you're the Jets and you're in that dressing room right now, Dave, you have to believe that you can win three games in a row, even if, you know, the stats and the percentages are definitely not in your favor.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that you have to just focus, as cliche as it's going to sound, because it's what every player said today, and it's the truth. They can only focus on the one game in front of them, and they can't focus on winning three games, because it's like when you're down two goals in a game. You can't try and score two goals in one shift. You get one goal, you get back into it, and then you worry about the next goal. Similarly, you're only going to try and win tomorrow's game, and then you're going to focus on the next one. So from my perspective, yeah, I mean, the Jets can, if they just focus on the task at hand, winning every 20-minute period. That's all you have to focus on. And then this is a team that we know can go on a run. They definitely have played well enough to win. Like, I agree with you, as I think that they have played well enough in some of these games to win the games. But you have to also factor in that Vegas has played pretty well as well, right? There's been a guy named Marc-Andre Fleury who's been out of his mind and is, you know, definitely, in my mind, has to be the call. I mean, we haven't really watched the Washington-Tampa series to the same degree as we're watching this series, obviously. But in my mind, if he maintains this, you got to think that he's the Conn Smythe winner just based on the fact that he's the guy that's gotten it done for Vegas.
Yeah, and Ovechkin and Kuznetsov and, you know, Braden Point, there are some other good players, you know, having a good playoffs there in the other series, the Eastern Conference Final. But right now, I mean, I think it's the conversation is Marc-Andre Fleury, Mark Scheifele, Jonathan Marchessault.
Those three
players are clearly, you know, ahead of all the other players in the series right now.
Of course. But going back to last night, I mean, we know how, I mean, the Jets with their 85 shot attempts versus Vegas's 59 shot attempts. I mean, they controlled that play. The Jets, you know, almost 60% Corsi four against the Golden Knights, you know, a little over 40% Corsi four. We know all the metrics and everything else. How much of last night's defeat do you lay at the feet of Connor Hellebuyck?
None of it. I mean, you're talking about, Riley Smith's goal, it's a breakaway, right?
Well, I mean, Morrissey's got the angle.
A clean cut breakaway, but he was all alone. I mean, it was straight on Riley Smith versus Connor Hellebuyck, right? And the puck is rolling. You watch the replay, the puck is rolling, and he puts it in a place. I think Connor Hellebuck's positioning was fine on that goal. I don't think it's his positioning or anything like that. I don't think Hellebuyck has played bad at all in this series. Marc-Andre Fleury has played better, flat out. And when you're, let's be honest, guys, in game three, not only did Marc-Andre Fleury make those two crazy saves on Mark Scheifele in the third period, he made a great save on Tyler Myers before that. Remember the save that he made on Matthew Perreault? Matthew Perreault just couldn't quite get it up enough, and that could have easily tied the game up. I mean, it's not like Marc-Andre Fleury has made three or four amazing saves. He's made about 30 of them, right? I mean, he's playing so well, and, you know, sure, Connor Hellebuck has to come up with a big save there on Riley Smith, but it was a great shot. It really was, and Riley Smith's a great player. He's more so known as being a playmaker as opposed to being a shooter like Marchessault or William Karlsson, but I don't think you can really blame Connor Hellebuck for the way he's played in the last two games. On the second goal that Vegas scored, James Neal scored the goal, and he coughed up the puck there behind the net.
Your second goal in Game 3 you're talking about.
Game 3.
Okay,
when he coughed up the puck behind the net, and that led to James Neal getting the go-ahead goal for the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, that's on Hellebuck. That is a poor decision by Hellebuck to make that decision to go play the puck. I mean, sure, it's a good play by the Golden Knights to create that turnover. But if you look at this series, the four games in this series, Fleury's been better than Hellebuck. It's not like Hellebuck has been awful. He just hasn't been as good.
To me, Dave, the most egregious goal last night
is the Noshek goal.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason for there to be a rebound on that play. Now, the rebound exists, and that's error number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's compounded by the fact that none of the Jets players, you know, pick up Tomasz Noshek in front of the net. The wraparound comes around, and they're just standing there puck watching. Nobody ties up Noshik's stick. So Hellebuck makes the first mistake, and then I think you can easily say, I think it's Andrew Kopp and it's Jacob Trouba are really covering air after the rebound is available, that makes that sort of the second mistake that leads to the Noshek goal.
Yeah, and I think we have a tendency because it's the goalie who lets the puck in, it's automatically his responsibility. But I think there's probably a multitude of players who can you can hang that on. I mean, obviously Connor Hellebuck, if he gloves that, then we're not having this conversation. And that is a huge momentum killer. I mean, the reality is, and we've seen it, and that to me is probably the most egregious aspect of the goal against, is the fact that you've just gotten the game tying goal from Patrick Laine. You've got a lot of momentum, you're feeling good, and then you give up that goal. And we've seen it three straight games now where they've given up a goal in quick succession or an early goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me, it's not so much that you've given up the goal. I mean, that's bad, but it's when you're giving them up, and it's the momentum that it sucks off of your team that it creates. So to me, those are the aspects. Has Hellebuck been horrible? He hasn't been horrible. He just hasn't been as good as Fleury. I agree with Ez on that regard. And he's made definitely a few mental errors that has cost his team. But ultimately, again, you've got to lay the blame on the entire unit. You know, there's five players on there in addition to your goaltender, and it's not, you know, the breakdowns are created as a result of, you know, X, Y, and Z happening. It's not just, okay, Connor Hellebuck let in a bad goal. A number of players set that up to create an opportunity to allow Vegas to get that opportunity and then ultimately bury it past Hellebuck.
And sticking with the goaltending, guys, I mean, that has been the big topic here, especially over the last couple of games. There's no doubt. I mean, we're not taking anything away from Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, he stole Game 3. He absolutely stole Game 3. I don't necessarily know that he stole last night's game. He was excellent.
Oh.
I think that a lot of what the Jets are doing has been self-inflicted. And the Vegas Golden Knights are still getting the timely goals. Like, give them credit for getting the goals. You talked about the opportunistic goals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're burying their chances when they need to. So I don't necessarily know that it's just as simple as Marc-Andre Fleury has stolen the three games in the series. I think Game 3, absolutely. I mean, let's be honest. The saves that he makes on Mark Scheifele were ridiculous. We thought the Jets were going to tie that game up and take it to overtime. But you also have to give the Golden Knights a lot of credit. This is the team that won the Pacific Division. They're a great hockey team. They're a fast team. They're quick on the transition. They get timely goals. So, yes, Marc-Andre Fleury has been great. He has been the equalizer. We talked about it. The advanced stats are definitely in the Jets' favor, especially these last two games. But this Golden Knights team is still a great team, and we can't take that away from them.
When we come back, we talk about how the Jets can get back into the series. We talk about tomorrow afternoon's Game 5. Much more on the Jets and the Golden Knights. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Wheeler on the far side, lost his footing, gets back up, plays it back to Buffalo. Delay, scores! Patrick Laine! Power play goal, Winnipeg Jets, and this game is knotted up 1-1.
An absolute bullet off the stick of Patrick Laine tied up last night's game at one goal apiece. Of course, it didn't take the Golden Knights long to regain that lead, the Tomasz Noszek goal that we were talking about the previous segment. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. And this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. They got the big screen TVs. They got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. For more information, bernsteinsdeli.com. Hockey Night at Bernstein's, they want it to continue, obviously, for another few games. Game 5 of the series goes tomorrow afternoon at Bell MTS Place as the Jets look to extend the series to a 6th game back in Vegas on Tuesday night. What are the keys for this Game 5 tomorrow? The Winnipeg Jets have, as we've talked about, really been the better of the two teams over the last, I would suggest, 5 periods of hockey. They've been controlling the play. The majority of the play has been in and around the Vegas Golden Knights net and in their zone. What do the Jets have to do to extend the game, extend the series to at least the 6th game and jump on the Golden Knights tomorrow? Is an early goal, or at least the first goal to go to the Winnipeg Jets, a key factor in tomorrow's game?
Yeah, it always is, right? Especially in the playoffs. But, you know, look at the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets and Golden Knights records, when they score the first goal, I mean, they're pretty good. So scoring the first goal is obviously going to be huge here, guys. But, I mean, we talked about it during the first segment. The Jets are down in the series 3-1 right now, but they have the better quality scoring chances, and they have the more zone time, and the stats are better, the advanced stats are better, and you know, you don't have the results right now, and limiting turnovers is huge, and it seems obvious, but especially against this Golden Knights team, we talked about it all year long, quick strike, they don't need as many scoring chances, they're a fast team, if not the fastest team. They're definitely one of the fastest teams. I would put the Jets up there as well. So you obviously have to take care of the puck. You have to manage the puck really well. But as far as I'm concerned, when you're the Winnipeg Jets, and we've seen this, when you open up the game, we saw it against Nashville, the Nashville Predators could not keep up with the Jets. Well, the Vegas Golden Knights can keep up with the Jets. I think when you talk about not turning the puck over, it's also how you manage the puck in the offensive zone, and we've seen the Jets have extended zone time, and the Scheifele line's been excellent, the Stastny line has been excellent, you know, whether it's been the TLC line or the AAA line, it's not like, you know, the Jets, I think, have to make major adjustments right now. These games have been close. We talked about it. The series could easily be tied, if not 3-1, in favor of the Jets. So I don't necessarily know, you know, there's one thing that the Jets need to improve. And Justin Bourne wrote about this for The Athletic. I mean, he talked about, you know, the Jets needing to control the puck better and not turning over the puck in the neutral zone. That, for me, is one of the big keys. They do have to control the neutral zone, and that's something we saw the Predators do to the Jets as much as the Jets did to the Predators. I mean, it came down to a Game 7, and by the way, I think the Jets are going to win tomorrow. I think this series is going back to Vegas, and I wouldn't be surprised if this series comes back to Winnipeg for a Game 7, and that's just because I think these two teams are too even, and it's come down to one turnover coming back to bite the Jets. But that has to be the biggest concern for the Jets, Dave. It's not only the turnovers, but the fact that it seems like the Golden Knights are capitalizing on every one of these turnovers, and it's resulting in a goal.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Ez. I think that, to me, tomorrow, what's absolutely critical is the start.
To me, tomorrow.
Yeah, to me,
I know,
tomorrow.
I gotcha. It's just a bit of a mouthful.
The absolute story is the start for the Winnipeg Jets. If the Jets get off to a good start, they're going to have that crowd behind them, and they're going to get the energy from the crowd, and they're just going to be able to pour it on. Because the truth is, and as we've seen, if Vegas gets a quick goal, or if Vegas even is able to just kind of keep it 0-0, you know, one, we may see the Jets tighten up because there's going to be that fear of, oh, no, if we give up a goal now, mm-hmm. we're in trouble. And also the crowd kind of gets sucked out of it because the crowd is sitting there with, you know, they're on the edge of their seat worried about their team. So to me, you absolutely have to have a good start. Now, does that mean you're too loose and you open things up? No, you don't want to do that. But I agree with Ezra. I don't think you want to go completely off the rails because you've done a lot to bring you to this point in the season. So sure, you've had some things go against you, but do you need to reinvent the wheel just to kind of have a better result tomorrow? No, you just have to clean up the things that you generally don't make mistakes on, because as Ez said, and he's right, every time you make a mistake, it appears to be in the back of your net. So to me, that to me is the number one key, is just to ensure that you have a good start and keep things clean, and then you'll have a very good chance to win the game tomorrow.
And going back to, you know, if you haven't read Justin Bourne's article, and we can ask Murat coming up about it. I mean, he's basically talking about zone entries and how the Jets are not a dump and chase team, but in this series, it's clear that the Jets have been too fancy on the zone entries, and at times it's leading in rushes coming back the other way, and that's something that he's saying. The Jets have to get back to the defensive structure and making sure that you do dump the puck in when you need to, and you know it doesn't always have to be pretty, and the Jets are a great possession team, so are the Golden Knights, but when you're talking about, you know, some of the plays that are happening, it's the result of the Jets getting too cute at the Vegas blue line.
I thought the Jets were a lot better in terms of, you know, being too cute in yesterday's game. I thought that was the best game that they played, the most simple game. There weren't really any neutral zone turnovers to speak of. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien goes to take a slap shot,
and
he whiffs,
yeah.
And he whiffs on it. I mean, what are the odds of that happening? You know, they talked about in the post-game comments, bad luck. You know, the Jets did. I mean, that's bad luck. Dustin Byfuglien, 98 times out of 100, makes solid contact on that slap shot. And instead, it bounces over a stick. Riley Smith has got the momentum because he's coming out to try and block the shot. And instead, he's off to the races and he ends up getting the goal. More often than not, that doesn't turn into a scoring chance. And they didn't do yesterday. The Jets didn't do what they had done in the first couple games when Kyle Connor, say, turned the puck over in the neutral zone right at the red line and the Golden Knights transitioned. And it led to one of the Marchessault goals in game three. The Jets were a lot better about, as you mentioned in the Justin Bourne article, dumping the puck in, chasing after it, and when they did so, they were quite successful at cycling the puck in the Golden Knights zone. I mean, the Jets had a number of shifts where they just cycled, and the Golden Knights had no answer. So in terms of radically changing their style, I don't think the Jets need to. I mean, they talked about it again last night. You get 85 shot attempts. 9 times out of 10, you expect to win that game. And if they do that again, I mean, maybe Marc-Andre Fleury is unconscious again. But think about it from the Golden Knights' perspective. They got the 3 goals. Aside from the 3 goals that they scored, how many real quality scoring chances did they have?
The Jets have had way more high-danger scoring chances. Right? And that's not in doubt. In this series, the Jets have had more. I mean, you could look it up. You can go to Natural Stat Trick. You can look that up. The Jets have had better scoring chances than the Golden Knights. Right now,
the high danger scoring chances yesterday were 24 for the Jets, 13 for the Golden Knights. And I mean, I can't really remember 13 high danger chances for the Golden Knights to speak of, you know, besides the 3 goals they scored.
Right. And, you know, we talked about this earlier, and we've talked about this since the series started. I mean, it's not like the Golden Knights are completely shutting the Jets down right now. I mean, Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor, we've seen them use their speed. We've seen them score goals in this series. We've also seen Marc-Andre Fleury make some incredible saves on all 3 of those players. So again, you're in the Western Conference right now. You're not completely changing anything. You're going to do what has made you successful all year long. This isn't a radical change, but you've got to be more patient and smarter with the puck because you know that the Golden Knights thrive on those turnovers. So right now, I mean, you know, if you're the Jets, the series is not over. You can easily win tomorrow in your home arena, and you can take this back for a game 6 in Vegas. But right now, I mean, it's clear that is the biggest issue with the Jets. I mean, we know that, you know, special teams can always be a difference maker in a game. I mean, we saw the Jets score in the power play. We saw the Golden Knights score in the power play. But right now, yes, scoring the first goal is going to be huge. The Jets are definitely going to play better if they score the first goal as opposed to chasing the game right now. But, I mean, this Golden Knights team is good. We talked about it when we were previewing the series. I mean, they're not as good as the Jets. I still think the Jets can win the series, and I think the Jets are a more talented team. Fleury's absolutely the equalizer right now, Drew, but you have to manage the puck better because it's not like the Jets have turned over the puck once or twice in the series. It's been 5 or 6 times where they've made costly turnovers and they've resulted in goals.
Can the Jets, Dave, can the Jets come back in the series if Connor Hellebuyck doesn't at the very least play Marc-Andre Fleury to a tie in terms of performance?
No, I mean, I think Connor Hellebuyck has to play like what we've seen from him all year long. Connor Hellebuyck has to be a difference maker, absolutely. I mean, the fact is, as Ez has just kind of illustrated, this team is very even with Vegas, but they've had a lot of good chances. Probably, as we just talked about, they've had a lot of the better chances. So the fact is, if Connor Hellebuyck can match what Marc-Andre Fleury is doing, well, then, yeah, that equalizes the series in my mind, because I think that the Jets overall have had the more productive opportunities. So I would think that if you can match it, now it's going to be hard. Marc-Andre Fleury is out of his mind right now. I mean, nothing seems to bother him. Like the flicking of the ears and the big smile on his face. He just seems, and honestly, I was watching, we talked about this you know, a couple Saturdays ago. I've watched this Vegas team a little bit more than I have some of the other series. He just seems to be having a great time. Like to use a Vegas pun, he's playing with house money right now. And it seems like it just doesn't seem like it's real. And everybody seems to like trying to be come up with an answer. But Marc-Andre Fleury, I mean, that's the reality, right? We've seen it in hockey before. A hot goalie can win a series. And Marc-Andre Fleury is a hot goalie.
And the Jets can't control the way Marc-Andre Fleury is playing. I mean, the Jets know Fleury is playing really well right now, so they have to focus on their own game. And that's cleaning up those turnovers. It really is. They have to clean up the way that they're playing through the neutral zone and into Vegas' zone. Because I don't think at all that this series is over. I think, you know, the Jets can easily win tomorrow. I think they will win tomorrow. And I think it's going to go back to Vegas for a game six, and we'll see what happens. But, I mean, you have to be confident in the way that you've been playing, because you might not be getting the results, but you're getting the chances. And Fleury's playing really well. You just have to hope that, you know, we have a repeat of game one when they scored three goals in the first period.
Game five between the Jets and the Golden Knights goes tomorrow, starting at 2:00 at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN 1290. When we come back, Murat Atesh of TheAthletic.com joins us. We'll talk more about the Jets and the Golden Knights in the Western Conference Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday afternoon, you're listening to TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com here in Winnipeg, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Murat Atesh. Murat, good morning, good afternoon, rather, and thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, yeah. I guess good morning is habit, but happy to join you in the afternoon. It's sunshiny. I like it.
There you go. It is habit, and I'll probably say it more than once as we go through the course of the program
this afternoon. Wake up, Drew.
Yeah, wake up, Drew is right. Murat obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets and the Golden Knights. You know, a disappointing two-game series for the fans of the Winnipeg Jets in Vegas as they drop both contests, come home for tomorrow afternoon's game, trailing 3-1 in the series on the precipice of defeat. If you're Jets head coach Paul Maurice, if you're the team in the dressing room as you're entering this game five and you're looking back at, you know, really most of game four and the latter half of game three, are you saying just keep the status quo and eventually the results will be there because we like our performance and the, even though it might not show it on the scoreboard, the underlying numbers and the underlying system that we're playing is solid right now?
You know, I think so. It is a maddening story. It is a frustrating story. And, you know, over the short run, all of these samples don't matter. They need to win, but they are controlling shot attempts. You look at the maps, they're getting them from good locations. They're getting the high danger scoring chances, the expected goals, all of the metrics that you would usually use to evaluate the success of how well they're doing at 5-on-5. Winnipeg is carrying it. That said, I asked Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp today, is it frustrating? And certainly the answer is yes, it is frustrating, because despite all of those things, you know, whether it's a bounce through Bufflin's stick here or a bounce in and out of Hellebuyck's glove there, there are certain moments that are just conspiring against that success turning into real success, which is, of course, winning.
Murat, what do you like most about the Josh Morrissey-Dustin Bufflin pair? Because their numbers were excellent together last night.
Yeah, it's tough for me to separate that from the fact that Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba also have terrific numbers no matter what's going on as a general rule. But yes, with Scheifele's line, Morrissey and Bufflin spent almost 9 minutes together last night. They had a 66% of the shot attempt. They out high danger chanced Vegas 5-2 during that same situation. That is dominant. It is the puck being exactly where it's supposed to be. It's where it's shots getting off from good locations. It's everything that you want except the goals. And Paul Maurice said today, I asked him about the switch. He said it wasn't defensive, which was kind of my thought. I was wondering if it maybe had something to do with matching up with Marchessault and his crew. He said it was more about Vegas playing man-on-man all the way up the ice. And that kind of gives a guy like Byfuglien, who's freewheeling a little bit more of a green light to push up the ice because he's got his one man and he's not looking at being outnumbered the other direction unless, as is the case with Vegas, they quick transition and a puck bounces through you. And, I mean, I think the decision was great. The outcome in that one moment was bad.
Well, what did you thought about Jack Roslovic's game so far? He's only played 12 minutes. He played 12 minutes in the game last night. But overall, what have been your impressions of the young prospect?
Very positive, very positive. Towards the end of the season, there was a time with Little and Perreault where I thought he was flagging a little bit, to be honest, and I was getting, I wasn't particularly critical of the decision to scale him back a little bit. But since he's come back, and actually all the way throughout the playoffs, he's been a really smart player who back pressures very hard. He's doing the kind of Perreault thing where he's one of the first guys to challenge the other team's breakout, and he's creating extra zone time as a result. Kopp has a goal from Minnesota to directly credit to Roslovic's forechecking. And in the last two games, he's been well worthy of his minutes and probably even the driver on that line. So the energy that Roslovic is bringing, it's a preview of what's to come. They need him to do it right now. And quite sincerely, I think that him in for Armia in that situation, I think the lines that they ran are the ones to go with if everybody's going to play as they are.
Murat Attash, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Golden Knights and the Jets. Golden Knights lead the series 3-1. Game 5 goes tomorrow afternoon at Bell MTS Place. Murat, Jets only have 5 even strength goals for in the 4 games this series. Is that just a function of Marc-Andre Fleury to your mind, or is it something more concerning regarding the Jets' offense?
To me, it has so much to do, like 99% of that is Marc-Andre Fleury. Before the series, I was on the radio saying that there's no way that he's going to run a 950 like he's been doing throughout the playoffs. And, well, hey, he's continuing to do it, which is a bit maddening if you support the Jets. He's having a superlative postseason. It's something for the ages, really. The saves are of the highlight reel variety. And then even the ones, that don't make the highlight reels because there are so many of them. I was just going through all the clips of last night's game in advance to get ready to talk to you guys. And there are so many moments where it's a rebound and then a shot that looks like it's going through the five hole and he manages to get a stick down or get a skate blade on it or what have you. Honestly, over 100 games, over a large sample, I don't expect that to last. Does Winnipeg take any comfort in that at all, being down 3-1? I honestly don't think so.
Now, Murat, before we had you on, we were talking about Justin Bourne's article. I know you're really familiar with Justin Bourne's work for The Athletic. He does a great job, and he broke down Jonathan Marchessault's 3 goals, and he was basically saying that he thinks that Winnipeg might be a little bit overconfident at the Vegas blue line, and he kind of outlined some of the adjustments that he thought that Jets had to make heading into Game 4. I mean, what did you think about Justin Bourne's article, and what do you think the biggest adjustment the Jets need to do heading into Game 5?
Well, I think that he's definitely onto something with how those particular goals have gone in. And the thing about Vegas, because in part they play man-on-man, they can push up the ice and with confidence of not necessarily being caught out numbers the other direction should they turn over. And if we had the metrics, if we had the data to track it, I bet you they waste the least time in the NHL in terms of getting the puck and pushing up ice. So there is something to be said about being a little bit conservative, especially against the guys who can hurt you the most. That said, there was definitely one of those goals. It was the one where Winnipeg was chasing the game. It was Marchessault's, I think it was a 3-2 goal. Pardon me if I've got that wrong. But it was a Trouba pinch in the neutral zone. And Armia was actually coming back with support as per the Jet system. and then flagged. He stopped skating because I guess his gamble was that Trouba was going to win the battle on the wall that led to the 2-on-1. That gamble is something you only do when you're chasing the game and when you're down. Otherwise, you come back hard. That's my impression of the situation. It was also the incorrect gamble. He gambled and lost, and it became quite the chance. So what I'm saying here is that the system is designed to pinch only when you have that support. And if Winnipeg makes better reads about that, I don't think they have to reinvent the system so much as just make sure that they've got the back pressure. And then when you have guys like, you know, Blake Wheeler's been terrific at that this series, Perreault's been good at that this series, Roslovic as well. As long as that guy's coming back, you just need to, you need to execute it, perhaps even better against Vegas than anybody else. But I think the system itself is all right.
So, Murat, we know the numbers when it comes to being down 3-1 in the conference finals. What do you think the likelihood is the Jets are going to be able to battle this back into a Game 7 and win this? And if so, what do we have to see happen?
12.6%, because that's what Hockey Reference says historically happens with when you have 2 out of 3 games at home and you're down as the Jets are. You know what? If you're going to be that 12.6% or 10%, whoever's numbers you use, if you're going to be that minority that makes it happen, a few things have to go right. First and foremost, you genuinely have to be a good team that can control the play. Well, I think Winnipeg has that. They can and have controlled long stretches of play, and you can see that in the scoring chance numbers from the season. Or sorry, pardon me. Well, from the season too, but from the series. You need goaltending, and Hellebuck has made some terrific saves. The one that goes in and out of his glove and then he doesn't quite recover from, a bit of a killer. The breakaway goal, I actually think he played terrifically well, but he needs to come up with one more save. Easier said than done against Vegas for sure. Some of those pucks that Winnipeg keeps directing at Vegas's end have to go in. For me, it's a matter of playing the system, some of those bounces going in, Hellebuck sort of recovering back to his dominant self, and heck, maybe even call a timeout if you've tied the game up after you've been out of it for a little while, because those quick strike, those ones, as much as Winnipeg can say and do returning to the system every single time, it's got to be aggravating. That's got to be tough on you. So be resilient. They're going to need some bounces. They're going to need some goaltending. But in terms of systems, they got to do what they're already doing, in my opinion.
Last one for you, Murat, and we appreciate you joining us this afternoon. You mentioned in a couple of your answers about the Golden Knights and the fact they play the man-to-man defense. That's unusual in this day and age, or in the NHL. Do you think that other teams watching the success that the Golden Knights have had playing man-to-man will maybe shift their styles going forward? It is such a copycat league. Do you think that you might see more of a renaissance of man-to-man defense in the NHL as a result of the Golden Knights?
I think that's a really insightful question, because the league is such a copycat sort of system. I think everybody is like mystified and enthralled by Vegas. They are the best story in sport right now in terms of the success they're having. So I bet you there is some copycat, some thievery of it. I think to really excel at it though, you got to have no weak links, pardon me. And you have to be able to sort of play with the type of depth and that perhaps Vegas has, as opposed to the top end talent and then a third or fourth line that you can expose.
Murat Tesh covers the Winnipeg Jets for theathletic.com, joins us to talk about the Jets and the Golden Knights. Murat, appreciate your time this afternoon. We'll look forward to seeing you at the rink tomorrow afternoon.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Take care, Murat. Thanks again. When we come back, much more on the Jets and the Golden Knights. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Plays it at center ice. Spezza will get it to Cody Eakin. Eakin with the long shot in right on save made. Rebound. He scores!
Golden Knights love scoring just after the Jets score. That was another incident of that. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com. Sportsnet.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Quick little bit of housekeeping notes from the Winnipeg Jets. They just announced literally seconds ago that they've signed goaltender Mikael Burden to a 3-year entry-level contract with the team. He was a draft pick of the Jets back in 2016, a 6th-round draft pick. You might remember him this year from when he scored a goal for the in the USHL for the Sioux Falls Stampede, and then had an absolutely epic celebration for scoring that goal. So Mikael Burden into the Winnipeg Jets organization on a 3-year entry-level contract. Just some more goaltender depth for the Winnipeg Jets.
Andrew, you mentioned, you know, he's been playing the last 2 years, actually, with the Sioux Falls Stampede. Everybody, you know, knows him from that goal, as you mentioned. But he's actually put up some good numbers in the USHL. So you'd think that he'll probably start, Dave, maybe in the East Coast Hockey League and then eventually make his way to the American Hockey League with the Moose. But, you know, just another good depth signing for the Jets. You know, we've talked a lot about Connor Hellebuck this year, obviously a 5th-round pick. So Mikael Burden, 6th-round, 157th overall. We were there in 2016 when the Jets drafted a guy named Patrick Laine, 2nd overall. But these are the types of late-round gems that can really pay off for a team. So, I mean, Burden's only 20 years old here, Dave, but, you know, the Jets are hoping that maybe 3 or 4 years from now, you know, he's going to be playing for them in the NHL.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't think he was at the draft, if I recall correctly, on that second day.
He was not.
So we didn't really get a chance to chat with him, which probably would have been difficult anyways, because I suspect he spoke mostly Russian at that point. But
Russian isn't fluent?
I think by that time, by the way, we'd already made our way to the border and we were making our way to Toronto.
I think we went to Niagara Falls, if I recall correctly, right after.
We had a nice little afternoon at Niagara Falls.
Ezra and I had a nice little jaunt to Niagara Falls.
That's
after.
Beautiful.
The American side. I'd already been to the Canadian side. We went to the American side.
We went to Buffalo for the draft and then quickly got out of there.
Yeah. but you know what? He was just recently with the Moose. The Moose gave him an ATO and he just spent some time with the Moose during their playoff run. He didn't obviously play anything, but still got an opportunity to kind of be with the guys in the organization. So good opportunity for him. Big guy, small. Like he's still got some filling out to do, but he's a tall kid for sure.
Like all goalies nowadays, big tall goaltenders. Yep. Back to talking about the Jets and the Golden Knights with Game 5 going tomorrow afternoon, less than 24 hours from now. You know, we talked about Jack Roslovic when we were just talking to Marat in the last segment. I mean, Roslovic to me has been pretty good for the Winnipeg Jets in his time playing with Perreault and with Little.
I agree.
I like that line. I think that line together has been pretty good. They haven't.
I also thought Armia was doing fine before he came out of the lineup.
So did I. I mean,
that must have been a tough decision for Paul Maurice. I don't think anybody should think that was an easy decision for him.
Well, you know, the only reason why Armia went out and Kopp stayed in is Kopp offers a little bit more of the flexibility because he can play center.
Yep.
But, I mean, I thought that Joel Armia has played better than Andrew Kopp. And you can make the argument that Joel Armia has played better than Brandon Tanev this series. So I was a little bit curious.
Hey, don't you talk about Brandon Tanev like that.
So my apologies.
Sniper.
I know. Well, sniper in the first round and a little bit in the second round. Hasn't so much sniped in this round. I thought it was a little bit curious that it was Armia out of the lineup when they decided to stick with Roslovic and when Ehlers was back to being healthy enough to play. But whatever it is, I don't expect to see any lineup changes ahead of tomorrow afternoon's game, barring there being an injury concern and or an illness, because by the sounds of it, with Nikolaj Ehlers supposedly being under the weather, and that's why he missed game 3, and logically, with Steve Mason not backing up Connor Hellebuck yesterday, and Michael Hutchinson being the backup goaltender.
Again, does anybody have worse luck than Steve Mason?
I have to assume that there's an illness going through the team, because I wouldn't think that Mason being out of the lineup is...
It's the Vegas flu, Drew.
Is injury-related. No, so I have to think there's an illness of some sort going through the Jets' dressing room.
Now,
that's just speculation,
no,
of course,
and Coach
but
Bruce,
logical speculation.
You're not a doctor, Drew, but you'll take a look.
I'll take a look.
Or you'll speculate. And the reality is that Jason Bell of Winnipeg Free Press asked Paul Maurice about that today in the... during the media availability, and as to the surprise of nobody, Paul Maurice said Steve Mason was there. Like, he's not going to answer it. He's not going to give you any sort of indication. My suspicion, much like yours, Drew, would be that there's a malaise of the flu type variety that's going through the room.
And Dave, obviously, we hope that Steve Mason is going to be able to back up Connor Hellebuck. And
hope not to see him in any case.
Obviously, we don't expect to see him because that probably means the Jets are down by 2 or 3 goals. But I mean, they are going to have to get some support for those top two lines. I mean, we've talked about it. The Scheifele line and the Stastny line has been driving the bus offensively. And I'm not saying that, you know, the third and fourth lines for the Jets have not been playing well, but we're probably going to need them to chip in some goals here if the Jets are going to be able to come back into the series.
Agreed. I mean, and I look at that Perreault, Roslovic, Little line as a line that should be able to do something offensively. They should be able to get, especially on home ice, some favorable matchups. Now, the Golden Knights, the way the Golden Knights defense has been, they've just been throwing their, you know, McNabb has usually been on the ice against the Scheifele line, but mm-hmm. I mean, that's been a matchup the Jets have won for the most part. But if you look at that, if you can get an opportunity where the Jets' third line, which is much more of an offensively inclined line, up against the Golden Knights' third pairing, that should be a matchup that the Jets succeed at. And I mean, they got the secondary offense last night from Tyler Myers, but 5-on-5, there just hasn't been a lot there for the Winnipeg Jets in this series. Only 5 goals at even strength in 4 games, and that's really not going to get it done. I mean, can you imagine if the power play hasn't been performing as well as it has been?
Absolutely.
The series would have been over.
And you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, we'll talk about that next hour, but the Lightning have scored a power play goal in 9 straight games. And, you know, the Jets' power play, we know how many offensive weapons they have. They got the big power play goal last night from Patrick Laine, but absolutely, Drew. I mean, the Jets have not been creating enough at 5-on-5. At least, they haven't been finishing. As we talked about, I mean, Jack Roslovic goes into the lineup last night on the third line mm-hmm. with Brian Little and Matthew Perreault, and I thought he was doing a lot of good things, using his speed. We see his vision. I mean, you know, Dave can talk more about Roslovic than I can. I mean, I've watched him play with the Moose. Dave has watched him much more than I have, and, you know, I didn't think that Roslovic at any point in this game looked out of place because he hasn't played the whole playoffs. You wonder about that sometimes when a guy, you know, is out of the lineup and then he comes back into the lineup. Joel Armia has been playing more than Roslovic, but I thought he looked really good. I actually think Brian Little had a great game yesterday. And, you know, Brian Little, he's not the second line center for this team anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a reduced role for Little. And I think in limited ice time, I mean, Little played 13 minutes. Roslovic played 12 minutes. You know, these guys, you're not going to see them out on the power play. Certainly the first power play, not even the second power play unit. And, you know, these are the types of games, must win game 5 situation, and not just game 5. If the Jets actually want to tie this series up and win this series, they're going to need 4 scoring lines. I mean, we saw that in the series against Nashville. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that these lines haven't played well. They just haven't been getting the goals.
You know what? Look, to me, so going back to what Marat was talking about, I really have liked what Jack Roslovic has brought from an energy perspective. And I think when you include someone like that who has the fitness that he does and the hockey sense that he does, you know, he really does inject something that you could use. And his puck retrieval has been phenomenal. I mean, whether it's in the forecheck or in the backcheck, he's just been excellent. And I really think, like, he has been a nice addition to this team, a real nice, you know, shot in the arm for what they've done. Now, again, he isn't playing a tremendous amount, but, I mean, obviously he's playing more than the Lowry line. He's getting that opportunity. I thought that line wasn't bad, the Perreault, Little, and Roslovic line. I thought, I mean, obviously we saw the goal from Tyler Myers with that line, but at the same time, you know, Drew, you're right. They do need to start finishing. They're getting, as he's right, they are getting the opportunities. They just need to bury them. And again, will the luster of Marc-Andre Fleury come off? Maybe. Maybe we see it tomorrow and they start burning it. And if they do, then that to me is the true test of Winnipeg. If they start to get these opportunities, it really could snowball into game 5, 6, 7.
And boys, that's why I think there's no doubt in my mind that Jack Roslovic stays in the lineup for game 5, because we know he's a more talented offensive player. Joel Armia can score, but I mean, Roslovic, we know he's a first round pick, mm-hmm. you know, was the leading scorer in the American Hockey League, and we'll have to wait and see until tomorrow, but I think there's no way you see Roslovic come out of the lineup tomorrow.
Well, what's so interesting is the Golden Knights have, truly, they don't have a ton of room for error. I mean, if all of a sudden Marc-Andre Fleury goes down to a save percentage of 925 from 951 where he's at in this series, well, all of a sudden, just that you know, extra goal or goal and a half a game, it changes the complexion of the entirety of the series. So, I mean, the Golden Knights have such a small margin. And if all of a sudden Fleury is, instead of being out of this world, if he's only excellent, well, it really is a different dynamic to, well, I mean, it has to start with tomorrow. But they do need him to continue to be out of this world in order to keep their lead in the series and to continue to lead in the series, because the Jets have just been putting shot after shot and scoring chance after scoring chance at Marc-Andre Fleury, and they just have been snake bit, that if they even get a little bit of a window of opportunity, it does change the dynamic of the series.
Goaltending is always going to be a huge part of the playoffs.
It's a great equalizer.
Look at last series.
Yeah.
Pekka Rinne was awful in Game 7.
Sure.
And he wasn't really good, I would say, for the majority of that series. Obviously, he gets the shutout in Game 6, and it goes back to Nashville. But goaltending was absolutely the difference in that series. One of the differences, Connor Hellebuyck was better than Pekka Rinne, and Marc-Andre Fleury has been the Golden Knights' best player. He's been the better goalie. Again, not to take anything away from Hellebuyck. But as you said, Fleury's been, as you like to say, otherworldly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to hope, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, that you can get that first goal, get on them early, you know, maybe get two or three goals in the first period
Do what you did in Game 1.
Exactly.
Do what you did in Game 1.
That's what
one.
Paul Maurice should just say to the Jets. Do what you did in Game 1. We're going to win this series.
That's the kind of insight you come to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for, no doubt. When we come back, John Mattis of Post Media Network is going to join us. We'll talk more about the Jets and the Golden Knights, more about the Stanley Cup playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number 2 is up next, live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Post Media, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend John Mattis. John, good morning. Good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, no problem, guys. How's it going?
Doing very well, John. How about yourself?
Not bad.
That's good. Glad to hear it. John, obviously we brought you on to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll start, of course, here in Winnipeg with the Western Conference Final, Game 5, going tomorrow afternoon here in Winnipeg as the Jets look to step back from the precipice of defeat and extend the series to a sixth game. You know, from your perspective, John, watching as an outsider, this has just been the Marc-Andre Fleury show from your mind. It's just what he's been able to do is a goaltender at the absolute peak of his ability, playing with a bit of a force field behind him and all the confidence in the world.
I wouldn't say it's all Marc-Andre Fleury show, as much as he's been phenomenal and has been well documented, even by Jets players in post-game interviews about them shaking their head and going, how is this guy doing it, and how are we just unable to score when we're generating so much offense? But I also would highlight a guy like Jonathan Marchessault, who is really, you know, this season, and you can even go back to the last season, turned into a star before our eyes, you know, goes from being a complete cast-off in general with the NHL, being a guy that's probably, you know, an AHL lifer, to landing in Vegas after a good season in Florida, to having an excellent regular season as the engine on that top line that is, you know, up there with Bergeron, Boston's line with Bergeron and Pasternak and Marchand as one of the best lines in all of hockey. And then this series comes along and Marchessault has had his moments where he's, you know, just been so dominant in terms of putting pucks in the net, responding to Winnipeg goals with a quick strike. And just to watch him, and he's so attentive out there, right? He's always, you know, chasing the puck, always communicating with teammates, and he seems to be the heartbeat of that offense that is so sneakily good. And there's other guys up and down that lineup that have contributed. Nate Schmidt has been really good this series. I don't know if there's a better stick, and by that I don't mean the actual stick, but the way he uses his stick. I don't know if anyone has a better stick in this series as a defender. He just is always keeping the Winnipeg forwards at bay. And I think when you combine Schmidt, Marchessault, and Fleury as sort of the leaders on those three positions, I think that's kind of summed up what Vegas has been able to do and what's probably frustrating the Winnipeg Jets.
You know, John, you mentioned Jonathan Marchessault being a cast-off, and then you mentioned Nate Schmidt, and you mentioned Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, this entire team is a team of cast-offs, all players that were left unprotected by their NHL teams. And when other GMs around the league see the success that the Vegas Golden Knights have had, is this going to make, you know, GMs think extra hard, next time an expansion draft comes around when Seattle joins the league?
Yeah, I would say as much as being a GM of an NHL team and being a GM of an expansion team would obviously be incredible and would obviously be a job that people be lining up for. You gotta hand it to whoever ends up being Seattle's GM in terms of taking that leap of faith, because you know that come that expansion draft, you know, I put an asterisk beside it because we don't know that Seattle's for sure going to get a team, but let's assume that they do. You know that all 31 other teams are going to be looking left, right, center, you know, double checking, triple checking every single move that they make regarding the expansion draft, regarding any sort of side deals, because this Vegas expansion draft is the absolute core of this team, and a lot of those players didn't need to be exposed or didn't need to be available to Vegas, but a lot of side deals were made and a lot of promises were made, and it's sort of blown up in the league's face, you know, in a good way, obviously, for fans and media, because we've seen this Vegas team turn into really the best story in all of sports. But to get back to your question, the GM's thing, it might be a game changer in terms of how the league as a whole, whether it's scouting, analytics, just managing a hockey team from a GM level, it might just alter how everyone looks at player evaluation and maybe not giving up on, you know, your 13th forward, maybe him throwing him in there more often, you know, mid-season, sort of the dog days of the season. Maybe you give that guy a few more games and see if there's something there they're just not seeing in practice or just not seeing when you know, put him in the lineup once every 10 games. So I wonder if that'll alter sort of the culture of these fringe players or of these players that maybe are having a bad year based on luck, bad luck, or just not getting the opportunity, like a William Karlsson who exploded for 43 goals. I definitely think it's a bit of a wake-up call to the league at large.
You know, John, we're not going to subscribe to the notion that some on Twitter that this is a conspiracy, that the league wants the Vegas Golden Knights to be in the Stanley Cup final, but of course, which we're of course seeing. But, you know, do you think that this story is just like so phenomenal for, I mean, just what it can do for the NHL as a whole to have this team go from what everyone was expecting to be out of the playoffs to be a potential Stanley Cup champion?
Well, yeah, there's, like, I think if I'm Gary Bettman, as much as, you know, he brings the team back to Winnipeg and obviously wants to see that market succeed and has seen it succeed, I mean, he's got to be having his fingers crossed for Vegas making the final. Like, that's putting the spotlight on the NHL in a way that we may not have seen in any other form based on what teams have been available the last month or so in the playoffs. Like, I mean, there's other high-profile teams that maybe would drive TV numbers better than the Vegas Golden Knights, but in terms of casual fans or even non-hockey fans paying attention to the league, that tells me that Vegas would be the best possible scenario. And it's overall, you know, let's say that they lose the next three games to Winnipeg, and, you know, in horrible fashion, they lose 5-0 each game. It's still such an incredible story, such something that we could never dream of, something that George McPhee, the GM there, could have never dreamed of last year, that it wouldn't really matter. Like, that's the point that we're at, that all this could have fall apart before their eyes, and it's okay, because you see the atmosphere that they have in the building, you see how the city at large seems to be supporting that team. You know, I haven't been to Vegas personally, but just from stories of people being there, it sounds like it's not just a little bubble of people that like the Vegas Golden Knights and hockey there. They've turned into a legit hockey town. Obviously, that there's some sustainability questions there. You know, what if this team isn't good next year? Do fans keep coming out? But, I mean, the way that it's gone, you couldn't have scripted it better. And I think that the NHL, if you think about the league office, they're just licking their chops at this because it's made them look really ingenious because they're there first over the NFL, and the NBA is not going to come there anytime soon, MLB either. So they're looking like the smartest ones in the room.
John Mattis, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is with Post Media. We're talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs. John, so much is made about how there hasn't been a ton of home ice advantage so far in the playoffs, that, you know, away teams have been very successful. Is the exception to that rule Right now, the Vegas Golden Knights, it seems like they are the only team, at least the only team left in the playoffs, certainly, that truly does have a home ice advantage. You would have thought here in Winnipeg, but you know, results for the Jets on home ice as of late have not been great whatsoever.
Yeah, this is one of those things that I don't really have a concrete answer for, and I know that's not what you want to hear, but it just seems like, for whatever reason, teams have gone into Vegas throughout this season and been unable to solve the Knights on when they're on home ice. And, you know, the dimensions of the ice are the same. You know, once you've been there once, that whole Vegas flu or, you know, the glitz and glamour of Vegas, that wears off. Like, by the time you're in the playoffs, none of that should matter. So other than the Golden Knights being able to maybe utilize last change or being able to just maybe feel at home, like feel comfortable in their surroundings, those would be the things that I look towards, other than maybe it's just sheer coincidence that now that we're looking at the playoffs with the Final Four, that the road teams seem to be doing so well. And I don't know if there's much to it other than maybe a couple of minor things, but overall could just be you know, the way that things go when you get down this deep into the playoffs.
John, moving over to the Capitals Lightning series, obviously a big game five coming up in that series. And, you know, Steven Stamkos has obviously been phenomenal in this series against the Caps. Nikita Kucherov, Braden Point. The guy to me that never seems to be talked about enough is Andre Palat. And he was good in the last round against the Boston Bruins. But since he was moved up to that top line with Stamkos and Kucherov, he's been excellent. Do you think enough people talk about just how good of a player Andre Palat really is?
No, and that's a great point to bring up. Like he's kind of quietly become, and I'm going to throw a name out there that I'm not comparing him to, but that he's become a two-way player that you can rely on very heavily. You know, Marian Hossa is retiring from hockey. I'm not saying that Palat is Marian Hossa, but there's little parts of him that I think are Hossa-esque, and it just kind of quietly goes about impacting the game. Obviously on occasion he puts pucks in the back of the net. On occasion he'll show up on highlight reels making a defensive play. But I just think that, overall his body of work is pretty underappreciated. And now he's obviously, has the spotlight on him with being in on the top line there with Kucherov and Stamkos. And I thought it was a pretty deft move by, John Cooper to shuffle his lines there. Also putting Braden Point, Yanni Gord, and Tyler Johnson together. That sort of water bug line, I would imagine, I don't know the numbers in front of me, but they're all under 6 feet, I think. And they're just out there creating offense constantly, cycling the puck, just quick passes to get to the neutral zone. I think that John Cooper has affected this series pretty heavily in terms of his decisions up front. And you know, and even if you continue down this Tampa Bay roster, and particularly the forward group, Anthony Cirelli's had a really good postseason so far, and he's a guy that wasn't even really part of the NHL team for most of the season. He hasn't really come out of nowhere because everyone knows him from, you know, scoring the Memorial Cup winning goal, from, you know, his great story of being totally untapped and a late bloomer, but the fact that he's come into the playoffs as sort of an unknown as an NHL player and turned into a quietly effective depth guy, I think that's also someone that's been kind of flying under the radar in terms of performance versus appreciation.
You know, John, you talked about, or Drew asked you about the home ice advantage in the Western Conference, but in the Eastern Conference, it's been completely unusual because Washington wins the first two, then Tampa wins the next two. What do you think? Is there anything to that? Is it just that, like, what would you attribute that to?
I don't know. I just think it's one team playing better than the other, and it just happens to be in the other team's ring. This series has been, in a lot of ways, a wonky series. A lot of things happening that you thought the opposite would happen before this series started. So, you know, if you think about the power player, the special teams, you know, Washington, like historically good in terms of on paper and performance power play. They've been bested by the Tampa Bay power play, which is not, you know, shocking, given the clientele or the personnel, I should say, on Tampa's power play. But at the same time, you think, okay, the edge there is Washington. And then you think about depth up front. as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, Tampa up and down the lineup, phenomenal depth. And then you go to Washington, and their bottom six heading into the series, you're going, that's going to kill them. They're, you know, the Brett Connollys of the world, Devontae Smith Pellys, like, they're just not as good as Tampa's depth players. But then a couple games pass, and those guys are contributing. And then now we're four games into the series, and Brett Connolly has two goals, Lars Eller has two goals, Smith Pelly has a goal, Beagle has one goal. So, you know, about a third of Washington's goals have come from these guys who you expect little to nothing from in terms of offense. So it's been a weird series like that. And even if you look at a 5-on-5 play and the way that teams are, the two teams are playing, Tampa is just hammering Washington's crease area, sort of the slot area. And then it's the opposite at the other end of the ice, where Washington is taking a lot of perimeter shots and sort of spreading the buzz around the offensive zone. So it's been kind of an odd series in terms of, oh, here's what we think is going to happen, and then what's actually happened. So it's definitely not surprising that the road teams have won, because that's just kind of the way things are going.
John Mattis is with Post Media. John, appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thanks, John. Take care. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, more on the Lightning and the Capitals.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Off the boards, over near Sergachev. Watched by Wilson. Back in deep. Penalty timeout. Redekrit score! What a play by Killorn! And it's 3-2!
Alex Killorn's game-winning goal from Thursday night evened up the Lightning and Capitals series at two games apiece. Game 5 goes tonight back in Tampa Bay. It's now a best of 3.
Alex Killorn from Halifax, Nova Scotia, home of Rick Ralph.
Yes, that is the home of Rick Ralph.
Well, it's called the birthplace of Rick Ralph.
Yeah, he was not actually...
No, I would say his home is Winnipeg.
His home is now Winnipeg. You're right. His birthplace is being Halifax. There you go, Dave. Way to stick up for Rick Ralph.
Got to keep you guys on. No, just keeping you honest.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. One of the fringe benefits, of course, of being on in the afternoon this week. Normally, we're not.
You see these steaks that Frank has cooking down at the cottage?
That's what I'm saying, is Frank was able to tweet us a picture of what's on the grill so that we can go by and you know, join his family for dinner tonight.
That looks amazing.
He's got some brisket on the grill. He's got some big steaks on the grill.
Like, I'm actually salivating. That looks incredible.
I'm just looking at that seasoning right now.
Yeah, it looks like a nice quality dry rub that Frank's got on the pizza.
It looks like a lot of effort, but I'm into it.
Yeah, well, it's not your effort. You just have to go and eat the food, Dave, so you're okay with that.
Frank can cook a steak.
Frank's doing all the legwork, and so you know we encourage you to do
that brisket. Looks like my baba would make that brisket. It looks so good.
Wow, it's baba quality brisket right there.
Well, I can't say it is. I haven't tasted it, but it looks
Drew,
good.
You're definitely going to risk it.
Risk it for some brisket? Let's talk about some hockey instead. How about that? Actually, one quick Bomber note. Just because people may not have been in tune to what the Bombers did earlier today.
I'm really looking forward to Darian Durant this year.
Who are the Bombers?
Very clever, Dave. Bombers, they got their middle linebacker.
Hold on, are we talking about the Flin Flon Bombers here?
That's what
here?
I thought you were saying. Like, is this a John Ginsberg sequence here?
I wasn't. I was talking about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. They signed middle linebacker Adam Big Hill, formerly of the BC Lions. He's been with the New Orleans Saints for the last number of years.
Good player.
Great player, and shores up a huge position of need. The Bombers have been looking for a quality middle linebacker for a while. Now, some would say 3-4 years. Adam Big Hill being signed by the Bombers earlier today. It's a 1-year contract, so a huge signing by the Bombers, in case you missed that earlier today. Bomber training camp, the veterans get on the field tomorrow morning. Rookie camp wrapped up yesterday.
What signing is going to have a bigger impact, Johnny Manziel in Hamilton or Big Hill in Toronto? Or in Winnipeg, sorry.
For those of you, our listeners, who are a little bit confused as to what's happening right now. You're listening to the Illegal Procedure football show.
Yeah. We bounced before between Illegal Procedure football and Illegal Curve hockey. Going back to hockey now, Game 5, as I mentioned, between the Capitals and the Lightning. It's sort of been a bizarre series. Washington goes into Tampa, wins the first two. Tampa goes into Washington, takes the next two. It's now a best of three. Tampa's regained home ice advantage. Clearly, that hasn't been worth anything so far this series, though.
And why should we be surprised at Washington losing those two games at home? I mean, they've been horrible all playoffs long. Remember, yep. Columbus stole a couple games in round one, and obviously Washington won the next four games and defeated the Columbus Blue Jackets. But for whatever reason, guys, the Capitals just don't seem to be comfortable at home. And I've watched the majority of these games, and they've been close. You know, you talk about how Marc-Andre Fleury has been playing against the Jets. Andre Vasilevsky was unbelievable. He makes 36 saves in Game 4. Mm-hmm. He outplayed Braden Holtby, and, you know, give the Lightning credit. I mean, they're playing well right now, and they've been desperate. You know, you go down 2-0 to the Capitals, and if you don't win Game 3 and you go down 3-0, the series is over, and now the series is tied, and Tampa Bay has wrestled back home ice advantage. But, you know, we talked to John Mattis about this last segment, and I asked him about Andre Palat. What about Alex Killorn? And you forget, guys, back in 2015 when the Tampa Bay Lightning went to the Stanley Cup Final against the Chicago Blackhawks, Alex Killorn, Andre Palat, I mean, these were key pieces. I was looking at Alex Killorn's stats that year. He had 18 points in 26 games that year. He's got 40 career playoff points in 61 games, and Andre Palat's numbers are very similar. I mean, these players, when you talk about secondary scoring, I mean, obviously, Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, I mean, those are your two best offensive players. And then now, Drew, Braden Point has emerged as that second-line center.
Yes. Both Point, Kucherov, and Stamkos in the playoffs, they all have 7 goals, 9 right. assists for 16 points.
And they're leading the way, but they've been getting contributions from Andre Palat, from Alex Killorn, Anthony Cirelli. I mean, less so JT Miller in the series, but, you know, JT Miller was really good in the first two rounds against New Jersey and Boston, but I think Tampa Bay guys needed a wake-up call because they dispatched the Devils in 5. They dispatched the Bruins in 5.
Well, but when they beat the Bruins, I mean, the Bruins won Game 1, and then the Lightning just dominated the next 4 games. So it was so surprising, to your point, Ezzy, about them needing a wake-up. It was so surprising to see them so flat to start the first two games at home against Washington. But you're right, after Game 2, when they were down 0-2 in the series, something like almost flipped in them and said, holy, we need to start playing because, you know, we've been the best team in the playoffs so far. We just haven't, you know, performed like in the first two games of the series.
Yeah, and, you know, this series is very equal. I mean, it really is. I think, you know, Tampa Bay, you'd give the advantage when it comes to forward depth. But, no, Nicklas Backstrom didn't play the first three games, and I didn't think that he looked right in Game 4. I mean, he started to play better as the game progressed, but I didn't think Nicklas Backstrom was much of a factor in Game 4. It's really been, well, you know, the top line of Kuznetsov, Ovechkin, and Wilson that's been doing the majority of the damage.
But knowing what we know about playoffs, Dave, and knowing what we know about players playing through injuries in the playoffs, I mean, what percentage health do you think Nicklas Backstrom would probably be at? I mean, I know you don't know the answer, but it's hard to believe he's more than, say, 60% healthy.
No, but he'll be playing on the second line for this game, for Game 5.
And he has been the majority of the year, Dave, because they broke up Backstrom and Ovechkin this year, and that's why I think we're really starting to see, guys, how good Evgeny Kuznetsov really is. I think a lot of people that haven't watched the Washington Capitals over the years don't realize how good he's been. And Ovechkin has been getting some key goals for the Capitals, but Kuznetsov has been out of his mind. I mean, some of the goals that he's scoring are highlight reel worthy. Not only highlight reel worthy, I mean, they've just been incredible. So,
You want to do the bird?
Yeah. Well,
Kuznetsov's got 7 points in the 4 games of the series so far. 3 goals and 4 assists. So he's been... you're right. He's been absolutely tremendous. This has sort of been his coming out party because he's been a good regular season player, but he's never been able to do it in the playoffs. You remember the first playoff run he had last year or 2 years ago with the Capitals, where he was pretty much invisible and they went out pretty meekly in the playoffs. This year he's been, well, certainly if Ovechkin hasn't been their best player, then Kuznetsov has been. But, you know, you get Backstrom back, and that's a shot in the arm, but it's hard to really count on much from him given the likelihood that he's not 100%, not anywhere near 100%.
Right, boys, and I don't want to say that, you know, Washington has been a one-liner or one-trick pony here, but, I mean, in this series right now, with Tampa Bay having home ice advantage again, I mean, they have to be better. And Vasilevsky is playing really well right now. He might not be playing as well as Marc-Andre Fleury is playing, but in game 3 and 4 in Washington, he was better than Braden Holtby. And, you know, I realized Lars Eller was playing second line center and he's been taking too many penalties. That for me, guys, is the big key for the Caps. I mean, Tampa Bay has the best power play in the entire league right now. I realize there are only 4 teams left, but Tampa Bay has scored a power play goal in 9 straight games. Mm-hmm. Their power play percentage in the playoffs this year is absolutely ridiculous. And we know the weapons. Stamkos, Kucherov, Braden Point. He's actually playing the point now as opposed to Alex Killorn, who was playing the point, but Victor Hedman, Andre Palat. I mean, they have so many weapons. So, I mean, Washington's going to need secondary scoring. And guys like Brett Connolly have been good. Chandler Stephenson. I mean, they've been getting contributions from the second and third lines. But I just think right now that Tampa Bay depth, the forward depth, is killing them.
Absolutely. I mean, right. But they have to say, okay, we lost the last 2 games, but it's still best of 3 now. I mean, they still have to, the Capitals still have to say, you know, at the beginning of the series, if you said that we were going to be 2-2, we would have taken that. And sure, they wanted to be 3-1 because they won the first 2 games in Tampa Bay and they were feeling great about themselves. But if you're the Capitals, you have to be at least reasonably pleased with where you are in the series at this point, given that, frankly, Tampa's a better team, and I had this as a relatively easy series win for the Lightning. It certainly hasn't been anything along those lines, but if you're the Capitals, you say, let's go back to Tampa. We won the first 2 games there. Maybe we'll do it again, just like they did in the first round. Remember, it's shaping out very similar to what they did in the first round. You lose the first 2 on home ice, then you win the next 4. Sure, they won the first 2 on the road, then they lost the next 2 at home. Now they say, let's go win the next 2 in Tampa, starting with in Tampa tonight, and then we can wrap it up on home ice on Monday night.
Right, and you know, we talk about this often. You know, momentum rarely carries over from game to game in the playoffs, but Tampa Bay has all of the momentum right now. As you mentioned, you're Washington. You steal both games in Tampa Bay, and then now you're back for Game 5 in Tampa Bay, and the series is tied right now. I think everybody was expecting Washington to be up 3-1 in the series at this point, but Tampa Bay has been better, and Andre Vasilevsky in particular has outplayed Braden Holtby, I think, in the series. But as you said, it's a best of 3, but right now, I think, at least, Tampa Bay has all the momentum, even if you don't believe in momentum in the playoffs.
When we come back, the Memorial Cup is underway about 6 hours west of us in Regina. Ariel Zur covers the Regina Pats for 980 CJME Radio. We'll talk to Ariel about the Regina Pats and about the Memorial Cup. And I think there's a big Eagles concert as well going on in conjunction with the Memorial Cup. Some junior hockey talk up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number 2. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
6 hours west of us in Regina, Saskatchewan, the 100th Memorial Cup is underway. We're pleased to be joined by Ariel Zur. She's the Regina Pats beat reporter for 980 CJME Radio. Ariel, good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
And our pleasure to have you here. Last night, it was a great opening game victory for the Regina Pats, a dramatic victory as the Pats score with 32 seconds remaining to defeat the Hamilton Bulldogs. Take us inside the arena. I'm sure it was an exciting atmosphere. And last night, the hometown Pats get an all-important victory in the first game of the Memorial Cup.
Yeah, it was a really big game for the Regina Pats. But keeping in mind that they haven't played meaningful hockey in about 5 weeks. They were bumped out of the playoffs by the Swift Current Broncos, actually, who went on to win the WHL championship. And so they went to the rink for 5 weeks, almost every day, with no hockey in sight until really this past week. You could really feel the excitement amongst the team amp up as they realized, oh my gosh, we're actually going to get to play some hockey again. So it's been really exciting to watch the excitement build in the players. And then that night, it was really something. I think what you saw in the Pats in the first period was just shaking off a little bit of the rust and also getting to know a very unfamiliar opponent. Of course, these teams, with the exception of Regina and Swift Current, don't really know anything about each other because they face each other unless they make it to this this tournament. But the Pats were really, really strong. I think in the second period, they scored two of their goals there. And then, you know, there was a lot of murmuring that the game was going to go into overtime. But Nick Henry with that shot, I mean, I have never seen, not just the Brandt Center, but I've never seen actually the coaches bench explode with so much excitement. John Paddock, Dave Drew's pretty stoic bunch on the bench, but that goal got them up on their feet.
Ariel, you just mentioned Nick Henry, who got the game-winning goal yesterday, and we have to ask you about him. He's from nearby Portage La Prairie, about an hour west of us here, and he was drafted last year by the Colorado Avalanche. How big is that goal for him personally, considered he didn't necessarily have the year that he wanted to have this year with the Regina Pats?
You know, Nick is coming back from a pretty significant injury, actually, to his shoulder. And so I think that this year was really him just kind of getting his confidence back and building back from that injury. I think, you know, when you come back from an injury, a significant injury, you see this in especially junior players, it takes them a little while to get their confidence back, to feel like themselves again. And I think that's what we saw from Nick Henry this year. I think that especially coming into the later months of the season, he started to look a lot more like the Nick Henry we were used to seeing, and the Nick Henry that we saw last season as the Pats went on their last push towards the Memorial Cup. And I think that it's been a really big last few games for Nick, and I think the confidence that Nick can take from that winning that game winner, but also the little things that he had done throughout the game. He had a big block, a block shot earlier in the game to, you know, prevent a puck from going at Max Paddock. So he had just a really all around good game. And, I think that's what you can expect from Nick Henry, not just for the rest of this tournament, but probably going into next season as well.
When you're a rookie playing on this stage, it can be tough enough, but when you're a rookie goaltender, that takes it to a whole nother level. Yet Max Paddock seems to be not fazed by the high level of play in this tournament. How have you seen his return to the net?
Oh, gosh. Max, I just think Max is so incredible. Like, he really is just cool as a cucumber. And what that does is it rubs off on the rest of the team. And I really saw it building, the faith in Max really building around the team heading into the playoffs. And just from the way the players talked about him, you could see that they trusted him. They knew that they had the game when it was in his hands. And so it didn't surprise me when John Paddock said, despite the fact that he wasn't able to play in the playoffs because of a groin injury, that he was going to be the guy in net. He's just so poised, and nothing really rattles him. The way he's, you know, able to see around in lanes, the way he's able to see the puck is incredible. But the most important thing is when he lets one in, it's gone. It just doesn't rattle him at all, and he's able to just get his focus back on. I couldn't imagine how I would feel on a national stage the way he is. Just 17 years old, it's his rookie season in the WHL, and here he is. He's in junior hockey's biggest tournament, and he had a heck of a game last night, that's for sure.
Ariel Zur is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the 100th Memorial Cup. It's underway in Regina. She's with 980 CJME Radio in Regina.
Those Pats jerseys, by the way, last night looked incredible.
Yeah, they are amazing.
That's a pretty sharp jersey for sure.
They've had a couple jerseys they had commemorating kind of the 100th year, and those ones last night, they're up for auction right now. For money's going, I believe, back into the Patricia's regiment as well. The Pats, of course, named for the Princess Patricia's, which are based out of Shiloh, Manitoba. So there's a bit of a connection to Manitoba there for the Regina Pats. But those jerseys last night, and then they also had they had kind of a retro Pats jersey that they wear. We called them the Maroons, and they had a maroon. They were mostly maroon with Pats written across kind of the stomach in a beige. They kind of went all out because it's not only the 100th Memorial Cup, but it's also the 100th anniversary of the Regina Pats, the oldest junior hockey team in the country. And it was a very nice, I think, thing for the Pats to be able to host in their centennial year, the Centennial Memorial Cup. And they've had some really special things happening in the city in the lead up to the Memorial Cup, and now that the Memorial Cup is on as well.
Yes, the Eagles concert. Did you go to the Eagles concert a couple days ago?
You know, I didn't, because I had a little bit of a mishap where my forehead met some concrete.
Oh, are you okay?
I am, yes, I'm fine. I'm fine. But so I missed the Eagles concert. It was going to be a little bit too loud for my poor achy head. But they have done some really, you know, the the Pats ownership group knows how to plan a party. Let's put it that way. And they also did an amazing tribute to the Humboldt Broncos, and they got to be included in the opening ceremonies as well. So it's been, you know, they've been doing some things right around here.
Beauty. Ariel Zer, Regina Pats reporter for 980 CJME Radio in the Queen City, joins us on the program. Ariel, you know, you mentioned that the Regina Pats, prior to their game last night, hadn't really played a meaningful game in about 5 weeks' time. You know, conversely, you would say that maybe the other three teams in the Memorial Cup have almost played too much hockey. The Pats have played the least amount of hockey of all three teams. Do you think that the Pats might be more refreshed and, you know, energetic as opposed to the other three teams when push comes to shove and the grind of this Memorial Cup really gets going?
I think there's something to be said for that. I also think that just the... they're just so excited to be playing hockey again. And so when it gets down to those last few minutes in a game where you've been pushing the whole time, I think the fact that, you know, they're getting to play again, that they have new life and new legs in this tournament that they could actually come out and win, gives them a little bit of an extra push. Now, that's also that comes with the fact that I know for a fact John Paddock pushed them hard during their off time. They were bag skated like you wouldn't believe. They were in the weight room lifting weights. They had a lot of conditioning done because he wanted them to have that edge. They got the edge by getting the rest, and so they worked every angle they could during that rest. And so I think what you may see from the Pats, because also they didn't have to go through the grind of going all the way to their championships, you're also going to see that they really worked on making sure that they would be able to keep that edge with the conditioning and the endurance.
Ariel, Regina wins their first game yesterday. Swift Current is on the ice right now. They're up 2-1 on Acadie Bathurst. With everything that's happened, the bus crash, the horrible tragedy with Humboldt, how special would it be if it was an all-Saskatchewan final, Swift Current versus Regina for the Memorial Cup?
I think it'd be really special, and I think it's something that the province would, you know, really embrace. Hockey does have the ability to heal, and we've been using it to heal a lot in this province, and really being able to rally around it. And so being able to rally around a tournament like this would be really special. You know, someone told me not that long ago that the year the Swift Current Broncos bus crash happened back in the 80s, the Humboldt Broncos won their championship, the SJHL championship. So it would be, wouldn't it be just a little bit, I don't know if it's serendipitous, that's maybe not the word, but wow, it'd be really wild if the Swift Current Broncos won this year as well. It'd give really the province something to you know, to cheer about.
You know, Ariel, I've got a two-parter. First one is, are you sick of the cowbells yet?
I actually like the cowbells. I have to say, you know, I covered some of the Swift Current Broncos run after the Pats were out and as they were going to the WHL finals. And I have to say, there's something a little bit endearing about the cowbells. If you've never been to the iPlex, which is where the Swift Current Broncos play, it is an atmosphere unlike any other. It gets so loud in there that it's... Swift Current's got 16,000 people in it, and the iPlex fits about 2,000. So when you think about it, you've got about an eighth of the city in a rink to cheer on this team. And I bet you there's at least that many at the game today. So I actually really respect the Swift Current fans and how well they travel and how much they love their team. And so, no, I actually really like the Cowbells.
Okay, and the other question is what can you say about the year for Captain Sam Steele and how good he's been for Regina?
I mean, Sam Steele is one of those players that when you're watching a game, your eyes just go to Sam Steele. He's someone that you have to watch all of the time because you never really know what he's going to do. And he had, it was a bit of a down year in comparison to last year where he won the top scoring award, the MVP, but he was in the World Juniors and the success that he was able to have with Team Canada. And I think that experience really refreshed Sam. The Pats weren't doing so well when he went off to the World Juniors. And when he and Josh Mahura, who had that weird experience where he went there and then he came back to Saskatchewan and then he went back to the World Juniors and then back to Saskatchewan again. But I really feel like that time that those two young men got to spend with the World Juniors gave them almost a reminder of what a winning mindset looks like. And I felt like the entire team, the entire Pats team, really began to turn around at that point. There was, of course, a bunch of key trades made at the trade deadline, but I think it really changed the attitude of the locker room to have two of their leaders go through something like that and come back and be able to share it with the rest of the team. And I think we're still seeing the fruits of their labor and the season that Sam has been able to have. And even you saw it last night. I mean, the Pats weren't really getting any traction, and then Sam Steele scored 19 seconds into the second period, and it really just boosted the whole team up. And that's what Sam Steele does for your team. He can be the difference maker, and he can do one little thing, and all of a sudden the whole team rallies around that.
Ariel Zur is with 980 CJME Radio in Regina. Last question for you, Ariel, and I almost ask this year on a yearly basis when the Memorial Cup happens. Do you think the Memorial Cup is now ingrained enough in Canadian culture and a big enough event that the host team doesn't necessarily need an automatic buy into the tournament, that ticket sales will be strong enough on their own even if the host city doesn't have their team represented?
You know, I'm not 100% sure about that, because I was sitting at the Pats Bulldogs game last night, and there were quite a few empty seats. And if you would think that if there's a game that will be well attended in the city of Regina, it would be the Regina Pats, the opening night, the pomp and the circumstance that comes with it. And it wasn't exactly, you know, it wasn't exactly that. I mean, there were a lot of Pats fans in the building, but not as many as I expected. I think part of that, maybe a little bit the price point, part of that also, I think, a lot of uncertainty about whether the Pats were, what kind of Pats team we were going to see, if maybe the Pats were going to, you know, I mean, I don't think a bunch of fans wanted to pack the state into the rink and see the Pats get stomped by the Hamilton Bulldogs, quite frankly. And so I think some of that uncertainty is there. I'm not sure 100% about the buy system, getting the host city in without, you know, them being able to work their way in. It does seem a little bit weird to me, but at the same time, I don't know who would be. I mean, especially if, say, it was the Everett Silvertips that made it, you know, to the WHL finals instead of the Swift Current Broncos, I don't know how many people would be, you know, packing into the rink to see Everett play the Hamilton Bulldogs.
Well, Ariel, it's only a six-hour drive from Winnipeg to Regina, so we'll try to send you as many Winnipeggers as we can. The only thing is there is a Jets game tomorrow, so next week you'll get some more Winnipeggers making the drive down there.
You know, one of my favorite Regina Pats of all time is a Winnipegger, Adam Brooks. So I love your city and the hockey players that you produce over there.
Ariel Zur covers the Regina Pats for 980 CJME Radio in Regina. Ariel, thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of the Memorial Cup.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
Take care. Ariel's appearance on the program is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. When we come back, one final segment to wrap the Saturday afternoon edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, final night in town. He's been killing it all week long. Joe List in town from the Big Apple, New York City. Maybe if you're looking for something, maybe you need to laugh. You're a little depressed as the result of the Jets' last couple games. Rumors Comedy Club, that's the place to be. Two shows tonight, 7:15, and I believe it is 10 o'clock as well. So be sure to get your tickets now to check out Rumors tonight. Joe List in town, his final night in town. And of course, if there's ever another overtime game in the playoffs, it's the hashtag ICOT pool.
So when Joe List has to go grocery shopping, does he just say, I have to go grocery, I have to make a grocery me?
I absolutely knew where Ezzy was going with that. There was no doubt in my mind when Drew said Joe List, I was like, all right, Ezzy's got something.
And is Joe List on Y2J's list?
I'm not joking. I could see the little hamster wheel turning, and I could see Ezzy was going somewhere with it.
Yeah. Don Waddell, he's the general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes. You know him, of course, from his stint as the the general manager of the Atlanta Thrashers, had some interesting comments to make about the team, the roster, potential off-season moves. Here's what Don Waddell had to say earlier this week.
Well, I think right now, as I said, we have to look at every position on our hockey team. You know, we've gone, you know, 9 years without making the playoffs, and some guys have been here, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. So not that they're bad players. Actually, you know, both players you mentioned are very some of our top players. So, you know, we want to make change, but when you make change, you want to make sure you're making the right change and making the right decision, because you can – anybody can just make change for the sake of making change, but if you're not making your hockey club better with those changes, it might make sense to take another look at it. So, you know, the guys you mentioned are guys certainly that people have called about. You know, I made it very – I talked to almost every general manager that we're looking to make some changes. So certainly when other teams are calling, they usually want to call about your better player. So we're in this discussion with not only those players but multiple players.
Donald Waddell, okay? Sounded like he was about to start crying during that audio clip.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he was okay, but the players that Steve Koulias asked him about were Jeff Skinner and Justin Falk.
Yeah, two pretty good players.
Right, and I think Jeff Skinner is one of those players that, you know, because he has 1 year left on his contract and he makes $5.7 million, I believe, you know, that seems like a logical player to be moved. Justin Falk, guys, I mean, he has 2 years left on his deal. That's one of your best defensemen. I mean, Noah Hanifin, Jacob Slavin, Justin Falk. I mean, Brett Pesce, I mean, that's your top four there. So I don't know if Justin Falk's going to be traded, but I think the Carolina Hurricanes are a fascinating team for so many reasons. I mean, we know that Don Waddell, Rick Dudley are in there now. Rod Brind'Amour is the new coach, but they've got the second overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
So they're most likely going to take either Zadina or Svechnikov. They're going to get a really good player. And they've got Martin Nekash, who all scouts say that he's NHL ready.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to step right into the league right now. Not right now, but come October. And we know that, I mean, this hasn't been a very good team. They've missed the playoffs, as he mentioned, for the last 9 years. But I think this is going to be one of the most interesting teams to watch, just because this is a rebuilding team. I mean, this team is not just one or two pieces away from being a Stanley Cup contender. As far as I'm concerned, they're going to have to make multiple moves.
Let me ask you this. I mean, let me interrupt you. You know, you say they're multiple pieces away and everything else. Truly, if they only got...
Well, you have to start with a number one goaltender.
Well, I was going to say, if they got average goaltending, let's say they get just league average goaltending, because they haven't had league average goaltending in a long time. If they get consistent league average goaltending for an entirety of the season, do they really need to do anything else? They got a pretty good lineup there.
Well, I'm not saying that they can't make the playoffs. I'm just saying, I mean, this team is not exactly like a team whose window is opening right now. I mean, this is a young team.
Yeah, but isn't the number one thing he's talking about Jeff Skinner and he's talking about
Justin Falk?
He has
to get a goalie for sure.
He has to get a goalie.
Yeah.
If he doesn't get a goalie, nothing else matters. We see it. We saw it here in Winnipeg. They're the same team practically, not legitimately, not, you know, with the specific players, but it's the same concept. You got all this young talent. They haven't been able to put it all together. And what's the common denominator? And, you know, Jets fans fooled themselves, or Jets, you know, some people in the Jets world fooled themselves for years waiting for Andre Pavlik to become that number one goaltender. Finally, this year, when Connor Hellebuck becomes better than league average goaltender, a Vezina Trophy finalist, what happens? The team all of a sudden is tremendously successful. I mean, if you're the Carolina Hurricanes and you finally can somehow get some average to above average goaltending, it's going to make everything else, all your other warts, just go away pretty quickly.
You know, and some people are saying that the Carolina Hurricanes should trade Noah Hanifin.
Why?
And I don't think they should trade Hanifin. He's an excellent defenseman. He's a pending RFA. I mean, he's a guy you sign, I think, to 5 or 6 years. But I'm just saying, I mean, the Hurricanes, I think, you know, have made, you know, the front office moves. They've made the coaching change. Bill Peters is now in Calgary.
Yeah.
Rod Brind'Amour is the guy. I'm just saying, I think not only are they going to go after a number one goaltender, I wouldn't be surprised if they make a couple of moves. I would see them as being one of those active teams at the draft. I don't think they're going to trade that second overall pick, but I think you have to bring in some more secondary scoring in addition to bringing in another goaltender, and I think they could probably use another defenseman or two as well.
Yeah, I mean, a goaltender from my perspective is what ails them more than anything else, you know, in their quest to get back to respectability. They thought it was going to be Scott Darling. He obviously couldn't get it done. Yes, this year, they signed him to a big contract, unfortunately. Now Don Waddell again has to search again for a new goaltender, look up and down, and maybe use some of those expiring contracts or soon to expire contracts if that is the secret to the success to getting that goaltender. That's it for this rare Saturday afternoon show. Couple programming notes. Wednesday, NHL This Week will be on this week. Again, Wednesday, 6 o'clock, and we'll be back at 9 a.m. next Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our guests. We were joined by Ariel Zur, John Mattis, and Murat Atesh of The Athletic. In case you missed any of the show, it's available on our website, illegalcurve.com, or subscribe, get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zaffia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Rory McGoran doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuth, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
Songs are set together, the team will be all right.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.